This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9watd.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. Tonight, the race is for Marshfield Select Board. Incumbent James Kilcoyne is facing challenger Eric Kelly. I'm your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by Jonathan Grabowski. He's the executive director of Marshfield Community Media, asking questions with me. Timing you all is WATD's Tom Gorman. And we're also joined by media partner Marshfield Community Media, who is taping this and will be running it on their own schedule. Now, our format is simple. We always do it the same way. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready. No longer than 2 minute open and 1 minute close, please. Then we have a round of questions from the reporters and a lightning round. That's where the answers are either yes or no, or two sentences tops. And as those of you who listen on a regular basis know, that's my favorite part of the show because most people running for office cannot answer just yes or no or two sentences tops. We'll see if you can prove me wrong tonight. Also, please try and keep your answers to around a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. Now, with the construction paper over here, Tom Gorman will flash the green when it's time to go. Yellow means you have 10 seconds, and red means stop. Now, if you keep talking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 second grace period, then the bell. So just we'd like to keep everything really organized. And we did choose the opening and closing order out of the official WATD stand-in newsroom koozie. So we're going to open with Jim Kilcoyne and his two-minute statement for Marshfield Select Board. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening. First, I'd like to thank WATD and the moderators for hosting this forum. I'm Jim Kilcoyne, the current chairman of the Marshfield Select Board and running for re-election on April 27th. I grew up in Scituate and have lived in Marshfield for over 45 years. I graduated from the University of Massachusetts with a science degree in business management and economics. I worked for over 35 years in the cardiac surgery space, retiring as a divisional director managing a $55 million business with domestic and international responsibilities. My community involvement spans almost a decade, serving 6 years on the Conservation Commission and the last three on the Select Board. I think this race is really about choosing who has the proper training, experience, and temperament to run a $110 million enterprise, your town. Financial oversight is the most important responsibility of the Select Board. I have decades of experience in the financial area, management, leadership, and in human resources. I understand that making the right decision is not always a popular one, but you have to make it because you know it's best for the town. A few key accomplishments of my term was I backed the school board efforts for the pre-K facility, as well as the VOTEC opportunities for our new students. I directed $4 million of American Rescue Plan money to replace aging infrastructure, repairing sewer and water mains, supported the Brant Rock Bullnose project, increasing public safety, damaged seawalls and protecting our homes, obtained $2 million in state grants for beach renourishment, and American Rescue Plan money for two new ambulances, replacing aging trucks and providing increased public safety. My business training has taught me that experience is important, and past performance is the best indicator of the future. And you just heard about that. In closing, I would like you to consider who you believe has the proper skills, temperament, and financial experience to manage a $110 million business, which is your town, Marshfield.
Thank you. That was the opening statement from Jim Kilcoyne. Now we'll go to the opening statement for Eric Kelly. Good evening.
Thank you. Hello to the town of Marshfield and everyone else that is listening. My name is Eric Kelly, and I'm proudly running for the Marshfield Select Board. I would like to thank WATD for this opportunity, as well as all those out there supporting me, especially the team that surrounds me. I would also like to thank my wife, Michelle, and my children, Olivia, Emerson, Connor, and Charlie, for their support. I am running for the Select Board because I feel the town I moved to about 15 years ago is going in the wrong direction. We are progressively getting closer to becoming a city. Our property taxes as well as the tax levy continue to climb upwards with no relief in sight. My opponent will tout his accomplishments over the years. Other accomplishments he will fail to mention is bringing tax relief to all homeowners, solutions to prevent big development from being built, finding ways to build starter homes, protecting our water supply, questioning why fees are being increased like the beach sticker fee, firing Fire Chief Jeff Simpson and not providing the chief a public hearing to give him the opportunity to defend himself after the Select Board unprofessionally bashed him, as well as our frontline firefighters at a Select Board meeting. We as a community need leadership that will stand up to those officials at the state level, federal level, and town level, both elected and unelected who continue to ignore the citizens they represent in the state while trying to coerce a citizen into voting for the MBTA zoning they do not need to comply with. If you really think about it, it's the equivalent of them standing next to you at the ballot box and telling you how to vote. This MBTA zoning has the similarities of the COVID pandemic as to what these officials did in an attempt to get everyone to comply with their rules and getting vaccinated. They use their power and authority to threaten and coerce everyone to be compliant with the demands. I ask all listeners out there in other communities that may have passed this MBTA zoning to review your town bylaws and charter, if possible, which it should be, bring back MBTA zoning for another vote to your town and defeat it, much like Milton has. Thank you.
Okay, that was the opening statement from Eric Kelly. Both candidates here hoping to win the seat for select board, and I believe the Marshfield election is April 27th. They're going to begin questioning tonight with Jonathan Grabowski, the executive director of Marshfield Community Media.
Thank you, Christine. So my first question is to Jim Kilcoyne. So Jim, recently people have been concerned about the leadership of town with the recent decision to not renew the fire chief's contract and the union's reaction to that decision to the Stop the Big Dig campaign and other land issues. Please talk about how you can put these concerns at ease and that the current select board is the right group of people to lead the town.
Sure. Well, first of all, the select board does something really well. It selects people that they appoint and also people that work for them and are hired. We hold these people to high standards. They're paid very well. Regarding the chief, the select board discussion was in an open meeting. It was recorded. Anyone can watch the tape, and the separation agreement is a public document. Those who watched know that I voted for or actually made a motion for an extension of 1 year. You know, the members of the select board are asked to make a lot of difficult decisions. It's part of the job. But these decisions aren't always popularity contests, and they're making them as hard. But you have to do the right thing for the town. We're like the sixth safest town in the state. The fire department falls underneath that, and I funded additional training for the fire department and other safety issues. I see I'm getting my yellow card, and we're going to work with our federal and state counterparts to deliver more safety money.
Okay. Question for Eric.
Eric, so you voiced your opposition to some recently done and proposed housing developments. So things like the South Shore Chambers 2030 plan showcase the need for housing in different types of housing developments. So what's the Eric Kelly housing plan for Marshfield?
An Eric Kelly housing plan. I would like, I've talked about this at previous meetings, but Mr. Town Planner Greg Guimon, and I think we need to focus on starter homes for starters. I think the high density development will severely impact the town of Marshfield over a period of time, just due to the fact that the resources that you're going to need, especially your water, and you get your police and fire. I think this high density development that's going on right now is a detriment to the town. Do I have a plan going forward in regards to curbing it? I would like to limit the high density development in this town. And look at other options, especially starter homes in this town. So people, instead of living in an apartment complex, they could get their feet on the ground in a starter home.
Do you want to do a follow-up question?
No.
I'd like to get back to that issue of the contract of Fire Chief Jeff Simpson. Mm-hmm. I have to say, in all the years that I've been at WATD, which is coming up on 34, mm-hmm. we got more phone calls, more emails, more criticism and complaints about this issue than almost anything mm-hmm. that we've covered in town. Since we started with you, Eric, do you think that this should have been handled in a different way? I know you had nothing to do with it, but if you were on that board, would you have handled it differently?
The issue at the, what I see is there was a prior meetings to them let the select board meeting when they decided not to renew his contract. So we don't know what happened in those meetings and what was it entailed and how much of it impacted the decision to use the budget matter in regards to letting Fire Chief Simpson go. I believe those executive board meetings played a major factor in it, and the select board used that as a reason to use the budget as an excuse to cut him loose. To my understanding, the budget didn't go over to the people I'm talking about, so I don't know what the matter is and it, besides, there's a, obviously a conflict of personalities, and obviously Fire Chief Simpson lost on that one. The board did not do a good job, in my opinion, especially not allowing him to defend himself at the select board meeting.
Let me ask you a follow-up question then. If you had been on that board, how, within the confines of legally what you can do, how would you have changed the way that was handled?
I would have had a public hearing for status, so at least he could defend himself.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have that opportunity. I mean, there was criticism made of him, as well as the frontline firefighters in our town, and Fire Chief Simpson couldn't speak because it wasn't a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the select board, I would look at it, ran roughshod over him.
Okay. Jim, let's go back to that same question.
Sure.
Do you feel comfortable with the way this was handled? Could this have been handled in a better way?
I think you can handle anything always in a different way in hindsight. Just for clarification, this is not and could not be a public hearing. It's not a public hearing. This was a private meeting of the select board, but it was a public meeting. So the meeting was the select board discussing an issue that was made public so the public can see it. It is not a public hearing, and it was never could be a public hearing. Second, I do want to make sure that everyone understands the select board did not renew the contract for the fire chief. That is totally different from people keep on saying he was fired. They're totally different things. The chief, like other individuals in the town, worked under a 3-year contract. We pay them very well, and we hold them to certain standards of performance. And, you know, he did a good job, but the select board decided that we needed to go in a different direction. And that is exactly the decision that was made. And once again, I'll refer everyone to the tapes. They can watch exactly the reasons why they were given.
If you had, and let me ask you a follow-up question, too. If there were something that you could have changed about the way that this whole issue was handled, what would you change?
I would have hoped that we wouldn't have gotten to the point we got to. It was a terribly difficult decision for me to make personally and professionally. But I wasn't responsible for that. It came to us. And then it was our responsibility to do the right thing for the town that we saw best.
Okay. Tom Gorman, our timer, you've got a question for the candidates. Give you the nice yes. Creaky mic here.
What is your position on housing immigrant families in Marshfield?
Okay, let's start with you, Jim.
All right. So we have an affordability crisis throughout the United States, Commonwealth, Marshfield. And I've worked very hard on affordable housing and trying to encourage ways that we can provide more housing for citizens. In regard to illegal immigrants, that will never be an issue that will ever be brought up before the select board. It is not a select board issue. That is a national issue
mm-hmm.
that needs to be solved on a national level. Everyone knows what is going on now is not working. And we need to have our federal senators and House representatives and the president get together and solve the problem. It cannot be solved at a local level. The federal government needs to solve the problem. They need to start working on it.
I'm just going to ask you a quick follow-up.
Sure.
It can't be solved at the local level, but in some ways it may have to be dealt with at a local level. Like, for instance, in Rockland, where they have the illegal immigrants in a hotel. The state reps are complaining because they're asking, and the governor, who I had on here talking about, they need help from the federal government. But mm-hmm. still, it's in their town or community. So if this happens in Marshfield, what can the town of do, and what can you do as a board, or just as a resident of Marshfield?
So fortunately, we haven't faced that. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware, I've never been made aware of any requests for housing for legal, illegal immigrants. And I don't think we're going to see that. Marshfield versus a lot of other towns in our surrounding community has almost zero hotels and areas like that mm-hmm. that can be used for that. So I just don't see that's going to be an issue in Marshfield. As far as what we could do about it, we would obviously ask the Commonwealth for financial assistance.
Okay. Same question to Eric. Again, I don't know if you want to ask him that question. Tom, if you want to ask him that question again.
What is your position on housing immigrant families in Marshfield?
I'm opposed to it, especially if they're illegal. I mean, they came into the country illegally. The the issue that has come before everybody in the state is the fact that we're spending billions of dollars. I would look at it probably at $5 billion per financial year on the illegal immigrants, and they can't even take care of soldiers, veterans, and all that in our state. I am clearly opposed to this. If there's anything in the town, I would say that if there was the issue, which I imagine there is, because I'm hearing from people that one area that they're being housed in the town is the Carolina Hill. If that's true or not, I'm not too sure. But I would imagine there's probably other areas. I don't think any community is zero from not having any illegal immigrants in there. Any financial matters that are going to the illegal immigrants could be probably dealt with at a town matter.
Okay. Any, Tom, you have any follow-up questions with that issue?
What would the town be able to support them if they came to Marshfield?
Eric?
Would the town be able to support them? No, I mean, we can't even take care of the residents that are here. Mm-hmm. Everybody is strapped under this, how can you say, the economy right now. High inflation, everything's through the roof. And we can't get relief at the local level. We can't get relief at the state level, nor at the federal level. And now you want us to take care of a whole bunch of people that illegally entered into the country? That's insane.
Okay. Do you want to ask the same question, Jim? You want to just repeat that, Tom? Follow-up.
Would the town be able to support immigrant families if they came to Marshfield?
Well, one of the most important things I talked about before as a select board member is financial responsibility. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we've had very good financial responsibility in this town. We've had extra money. This money could be allocated if necessary, although I believe that we would definitely want to get to the Commonwealth and request the Commonwealth to return that money to us. I think at some point you have to have some type of compassion for individuals in the world, and I know it's difficult, but I think the town of Marshfield, that's the spirit and type of people we have in this community. They've always pulled together and supported each other. So yes, we would have some money. We don't have a ton of money, and second, we'd want it back from the Commonwealth.
Okay. Question, Jonathan Grabowski from Marshfield Community Media.
Sure.
Question for both of you. I'm going to switch it up here since we're going to be at town meeting a less than a week today. So an article at a recent town meeting that generated a lot of buzz was the beach bus proposal. So my question to you is, does Marshfield do enough for tourism and take advantage of the economic opportunities our coastline provides? And if not, where can we be better? And that's a question to both the candidates, Christine.
Well, let's start with Eric.
So does Marshfield take advantage of tourism?
Yeah.
You said there was an article on the town meeting.
So we talked the beach bus was on the town meeting, was a town meeting article last year, and it was controversial. A lot of people had varying opinions on it. And my question was, does Marshfield do enough for tourism and take advantage of the economic opportunities that our coastline provides? And if we're not, where can we be better?
I mean, I don't know if it's the town itself that needs to step up in regards to tourism. I guess if there was businesses out there that were interested in making money, come before the select board with your plan, and would you look at it from there and implement some kind of tourism activity right there for Marshfield. I don't think it should fall on the town to fund anything or anything like that. I think it comes down to maybe private industry doing it. As regards to the bus last year, I was opposed to it just due to the fact that I think that it would have been a negative impact on the taxpayers itself in the long run.
Same question?
Mm-hmm. Same question.
Jim?
Yeah, would you give it a
Sure. So does Marshfield do enough for tourism and take advantage of the economic opportunities that our coastline provides? And if we're not, where can the town be better?
That's a real good question. We're kind of handicapped because Marshfield has just a couple of roads in and a couple of roads out. So it's not an easy town to get to. And I think that is historically why we have not had a lot of hotels and different types of things like that. Most of our businesses around here serve our community. Most of our restaurants are geared towards local restaurants. We also have a very limited amount of parking spaces that I would want to prioritize for our residents. So how to improve upon that. I guess the question is, do we really want to? Maybe this is really a nice, small seaside town that we want to kind of preserve that character and allow our residents first access to the beach and parking at the beach.
Any follow-up to that? Okay. Driving through town, I don't live in Marshfield, but I drive through here a lot, and I see a lot of the Stop the Big Dig signs in town. Do you support the proposed 40B on Ferry Street? Let's start with you, Jim.
The 40B. So this 40B project will never come before a select board member, regardless of who sits on the select board. Mm-hmm. All right? I am not particularly enthralled with this project for two reasons. One, it's over our aquifer, and number two, it's a high-density development in a single-family area. The town, unfortunately, had multiple opportunities to purchase this land, but they didn't purchase it. There were bigger projects brought in. They were turned down with 500,000 yards or something like that removal with on-site shaking of the soil. And so that's all been brought down to less than a quarter of that. The big issue here is 40B. I think the zoning board has done a great job. It falls under Commonwealth zoning law, not town zoning law. So the only issue that the ZBA can deal with is trying to mitigate the program as much as possible.
Okay. But do you personally, as a resident of Marshfield, do you support this or not?
Well, that's what I said to you.
Yeah.
I'm not a real enthusiastic supporter of this project because of those two reasons.
Okay.
In this location, correct?
Okay. Same question, Eric.
I'll give you the answer. No, I'm not.
Okay.
I believe putting a development like this over our town's aquifer will have a detrimental impact potentially in the future in regards to our water supply. Like I've said before, I think it'd be like a slow poisoning to a water system, depending on the septic systems and everything else that is in place there. It is like my opponent said that it is a single family home. It'll generate a lot of traffic. My look at it is in regards to resolving it, if possible, we should be looking at eminent domain or some kind of article through the CPC funds in regards to retaining that property. I think what was asked to be purchased, I think the cost of trying to purchase that land was out of sight where it was. I think we need to bring it down realistically and go that way.
Okay. Jonathan, you had a follow-up question.
Quick follow-up question to both of you. How much is the town to blame to where we got with this piece of land? Because I remember going back 15 years or so that there's been several proposals from soccer fields to everything else under the sun being proposed, and I think it's gotten to a point where the owner said, you know, last resort, I'm putting a 40B in. So how much is the town to blame to be where we are now?
Eric?
I don't think the town really has the blame. I think it's the owner of the property, because their goal, whatever they did, was to excavate as much sand and rock out of there to make a profit, and they used every tool in the book, especially the soccer field, to do that and to help influence the town to voting for this and other things. But the amount of truck traffic that the would generate to excavate all this gravel and sand would be tremendous in the neighborhood. My look at it is that I think the town needs to step in before this goes any further and acquire the land somehow at a reasonable rate.
Okay, same question to Jim.
Well, in my business years, I always learned when you make mistakes, you have to take ownership of it. That's part of solving the problem. For right or for wrong, it's always easy on Monday morning to say, did the town make poor decisions 10, 15 years ago at town meeting? I'm sure they sounded like good, reasonable decisions at the time, but at this point, it didn't work out that way. There is no chance, zero, and I don't know why my opponent thinks there could be eminent domain done here, and also CPC doesn't have nearly the money that they would be able to have to buy that. That's why it was turned down in the first place. And the private developer doesn't want to sell it. The private developer is now moving forward with the 40B. I think a really good start to protect our aquifer, I'll tell you, and a very easy one, would be for the Department of Public Works, to move its tons and tons of road salt that is stored directly upstream on the aquifer and move it to another period of town because we've got increased salinity in our water.
You're listening to a WATD Political Forum. It is the race for Marshfield Select Board. We have the incumbent in here, and that is Jim Kilcoyne, and we have Eric Kelly, his challenger. We're going to take a quick break here and be back right after this.
Mother's Day will be coming up on May 12th, and it's not too soon to begin planning for a gift for your mom. The Marshfield Council on Aging Boosters has an option for you. Why not place a leaf in your loved one's name on the giving tree at the Marshfield Senior Center? Each leaf can hold four lines of text so that your loved one and the entire family may be included. More information is available at marshfieldcoaboosters.org. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Mother's Day.
Mark your calendar for the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, happening on Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9 at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston, for a packed night of food and fun to raise awareness for this longtime South Shore nonprofit organization. The Talking Information Center is a volunteer-driven radio reading service serving the visually impaired population of Massachusetts. The evening is hosted by WATD radio personality Rob Hakala, and live music and dancing provided by the multi-New England Music Award-nominated band Total Strangers. The evening also features great auction items and recognition of star TIC volunteers of over 46 years. That's the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9, at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston. For tickets, more information, or to just make a contribution, visit the Talking Information Center at ticnetwork.org. That's ticnetwork.org.
Welcome back to a WATD Political Forum. It is the race for Marshfield Select Board. We've got Jim Kilcoyne in here, the incumbent, and his challenger, Eric Kelly. And joining me here in studio, Jonathan Grabowski, the executive director of Marshfield Community Media. Timing us here, our WATD's own Tom Gorman, asking a few questions as well. Now, right before we went to the break, we were on one topic. We were talking about the proposed 40B there on Ferry Street. That's we've gotten a lot of comments. Again, this is another issue that's a lot of people in Marshfield want to feel that they can have more of a control about. Jonathan, do you have any other questions about this issue that you think people would want to know from these candidates?
I would like to get their definition of affordable housing.
Good question. Let's start with you, Eric. What do you think is affordable housing in Marshfield?
I believe what affordable housing is not what people are paying for rent right now. And that's, I mean, if you look at what Madison is charging, I believe for like a two bedroom, it's like $2,000 just to get in the door. At the economic time right now, not many people can afford that. You'd probably have to own a two bedroom, you'd probably have to have four people living in there. I think a three bedroom was like over $3,000. To me, with the Madison, everybody says affordable housing, and I think that's just an absurd saying, especially with these, when they're using 40B. It's not affordable, especially when they're selling land, or the landowner sells it to the developer, and they're selling the land by how many units are being built on that property. So on the Madison, I think it was the landowner collected $28,125 per unit, which I think there was 249 units, and the same with the development going next to it, which was 280 units.
What would you, just to quantify things, because I'm really into that, you know, how much, what would you think a reasonable, affordable rent would be for a two-bedroom apartment in Marshfield, and let's say a Marshfield starter home? What do you think is affordable?
At a price?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You may be looking at $1,800, but it's hard to say because, I mean, people say they how can you look at it? They sell apartments and everything else like that, and they're going to make up the difference. I guess the whole thing is that how do you get people to afford it without having to rely on the government for assistance in order to live there?
But could you give a number though? It's like a $300,000 house. Is that affordable?
Oh, give me a number. Well, like
a
I said, a starter home. I mean, probably $300, even less than that. I mean, you don't have to have all the bells and whistles. Somebody just needs to get in the door and get their feet grounded, mm-hmm. and then go from there. I don't, you know, I know the cost of construction's up there. So I guess you have to factor that all in. But I don't think you need to build a starter home. I don't think you need to build anything ritzy. I mean, let somebody get in there, and eventually they can improve upon it over time.
Okay. Same question, Jim.
Would you mind repeating it?
Define affordable housing. We've been talking about affordable housing, but give us your definition of it.
So this is the thing we're going back and forth and back and forth with. People don't want to have the town change its character. They don't want, say, multifamily housing. At the same time, they want to have affordable housing. The best way to have affordable housing is to have more units per acre. It lowers the cost of the construction. It lowers the cost of the land acquisition. And as far as starter homes, there isn't enough land available in Marshfield to have a lot of starter homes. And then the owners have a right to sell the land at the price that they want to sell it at. You just can't come in and take their land at a forced lower price. Regarding what is the definition of affordable, it's very difficult to say what's affordable in one community is not affordable in another. I know the Commonwealth has a definition. I believe it's 80% of the average income within the community.
Okay, I know that that's what the state may say. What do you think, if you're coming to Marshfield, just ballpark figure, what do you think is affordable?
Just throw me a number. I cannot answer that. How do I know what is affordable for one person versus another person? What one person's willing to sell their house for versus somebody else? We have a housing crisis. Housing has gone sky high. I understand that if you have a house, people want to stay in it because of the interest rates were lower.
You can't give me a number, like $300,000 for a house, like $1,500 a month for an apartment. Just some numbers.
I want some numbers.
Please.
I don't think it's really possible for anyone to sit here and say economically what a number should be.
Let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
Let's say you've got one of your kids graduated from college, starting a job. Not in a high, you know, not on Wall Street, just I'm saying like maybe a training program at a local company. What do you think they would be looking for to pay for rent in Marshfield?
I would say probably $1,500.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
That might not be my definition of affordable, though, just so you know.
It's hard to get started now. These prices are
really... It's terrible.
Really,
it's absolutely terrible. I agree.
Really, really sky high. Let's switch over. Actually, you know what? While we're on housing, let's go to the MBTA community zoning. This has gotten some pretty passionate arguments in a lot of towns. One town that took back that vote, of course, Milton. You see what's happening with the state now coming in, the Attorney General's office suing the town of Milton because they said, we're not going to do this with the MBTA community zoning. First, I'd like each candidate to give a definition in a couple of sentences, what your idea is of this community zoning law and why you think the town should or should not adopt it. Let's start with you, Eric.
So could you repeat that, why the town should not adopt the...
Two parts. I'll give you 2 minutes. First, what is your definition of the MBTA community zoning law that the towns who are either in the near the transit hubs or adjacent, like here in Marshfield, what are we, a mile and a half, I think, from the Greenbush line, and they say that's a whole other story. I've got opinions on that, but I can't give that. So they've got to come up with the right kind of zoning to comply with the MBTA community's law. So what is your interpretation of what this law is, what it means in Marshfield?
Oh, it means, my interpretation, or not even my interpretation, it's what the law says. So if you look at the law, in you go down, so it's broken up into three sections, A, B, and C. So letter B in the law, it states that if a town chooses not to comply, all right, so the options right there not to comply, the whole thing is that trying to cram a town, make a town vote for something that it doesn't want to is insane. But when you get back to the town chooses not to comply, it stipulates different sections of funding in there. So if you read the funding, everything pertains to high-density housing. So if you don't pass the law, what funding do you actually lose from the town? But to my understanding, the non-elected bureaucrats are adding things onto it to coerce the towns to take it, you know, or threat, or you could look at it as threatening them. Hey, if you don't, even though the law states this, we're adding on all these other funding mechanisms that you won't receive, so you better pass it.
Okay. So now what would be your understanding? What can the town do? What should they do?
Vote no.
Just vote no.
Vote no on the law.
Okay. And what do you, what about if the town gets into a lawsuit with this, with the state, like is happening in Milton? Do you think that's worth the money?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you have the, in regards to MBTA zoning, Greg even says the state's expecting at least, I think, 1,170 units, right? That's the minimum, all right? You may have twice that actually being built there. So it'll be well worth saying no to this and fighting the state. I don't think a state has a leg to stand on, in my opinion, just through the fact of the law and letter B. If it chooses, town chooses not to comply, you lose these certain funding mechanisms, which all pertain to high-density development. If anybody reads the law, it's right there. But you have the non-elected bureaucrats adding things onto it, which I might look at as illegal. The threatening and coercing communities and towns across the street with this. It's insane. I would look at it as pretty much that they're a tyrannical government right now, the way they're acting on this.
Okay. Jim, same question, two parts. First, to your definition of what this MBTA community zoning law is.
Sure. This gets back to right where we were at the last question.
Okay.
Trying to have affordable and more housing. This started out as a multifamily, at least one zoning district in a town of a reasonable size where housing is by right. All right. And multifamily, it has changed. And now that can count towards your affordable 10%. So that was a big change. I applaud what the planning manager did. It was extremely difficult to pick the section. I think my candidate is mistaken. The reason why this is occurring is because the Commonwealth does have superior zoning regulations over towns. The towns are subject to Commonwealth regulation. The area that was picked is already developed. So it's not that like there isn't any development. There's car dealerships, restaurants there, they're not gonna sell. So you're gonna have a small amount. It doesn't mean just because they can build that they will build.
Okay, now answer a question for me, because here's something that we've been looking at here at WATD. They talk about high density housing, but there's nowhere in the original bill that was written that was passed during the Baker administration that the word affordable was in there. So theoretically, you could have 15 units on 1 acre, $1 million condos.
Yes.
So people keep complaining about you're against affordable housing, but in theory, none of this has to be affordable.
No, that's what I just said.
Yeah,
Representative Kearney today, they added that it counts towards affordable, and the town can require that them be at least 10% affordable. I have to tell you, this goes back to your major responsibility as a select board member is to manage the town competently financially. And I am not for this, don't get me wrong. But if you're gonna be a select board member and say you're gonna let your town be sued by the Commonwealth, you're gonna let your town lose tens and tens of millions of dollars of grant money, either you're going to cut services severely or you're going to raise taxes to make it up. And this would be financially irresponsible of a select board member to counsel their town to vote against this. And Mr. Kelly, the location as good as it would be, I mean, where would you put it? In Blackmount? North Marshfield?
I would say no to it. Period. Nowhere.
I'm asking the questions here. But Eric, if you want another minute to talk about this, go right ahead.
The town chose 86 acres on 139. That goes from School Street all the way down to the driveway of the high school, all right? Now, my opponent here says that the state has the authority in regards to zoning. Well, the whole thing is that the only thing they changed in regards to this particular MBTA, in regards to the law, is that it had to be a simple majority, not the standard two-thirds that is on law by the books, to my understanding, all right? So simple majority. So the whole thing is that the state cannot change the zoning on this at all, like my opponent is saying, in regards that they have the authority to do it. It's a simple majority. So if it goes to town meeting and the majority says no to it, then it's defeated. Mm-hmm. End of story. You know, so, I mean, and he's saying that the state is not worth fighting the state. Absolutely is worth fighting the state. That this potential development would crush the town between the schools, the services, water. It would have a negative impact, much like it will have in other communities.
I'll give you a 30-second follow-up. Do you think this will pass at town meeting?
No.
Okay. Jim, do you think this will pass at town meeting?
I think it'll be close.
Any follow-up questions, Jonathan?
No, but I have a question that kind of goes along that same area, okay. 139, if you don't mind me asking it.
Sure.
So, Enterprise Park. So, I was Chamber of Commerce president when we had the ribbon cutting for the widening of 139, and there was talk about this great vision of Enterprise Park and hotels, conference centers, all these types of businesses. And while we have business in there, it's not what we expected, you know, Enterprise Park to be. So my question to the two of you is, where did it go wrong?
You mean while we're sitting here in Enterprise Park?
Yes.
Did you notice, did you notice that the sign to the road was crumpled in half tonight when you drove in?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so I don't know how that happened. So where did Enterprise Park, the adult entertainment district as well, go wrong? Let's start with you, Jim Kilcoyne.
I know the vision that I heard about when it started mm-hmm. was quite different than the reality of today.
Exactly.
What I have learned regarding this issue is we once again have basically one way in and one way out. It is fairly congested now as well. It could get worse. And that sewer, not having sewer, was the biggest number one reason why hotels wouldn't come in, light industry wouldn't come in, light medical wouldn't come in. They were not willing to take the risk of litigation and all the costs that were associated with developed private sewer systems. And I think that was a major, major contributor to why it never achieved what they thought it was going to achieve.
Okay. Same question, Eric.
Can you repeat that again?
Sure. So Enterprise Park, where did it go wrong? We were promised that all these businesses and hotels and conference centers and all these things would come in. And granted, we have some amazing businesses here in Enterprise Park, but the vision and the reality are different.
I don't think anything went wrong. I mean, someone owns the land, so they're doing it accordingly. I mean, you do have some great business here already.
Right.
You have two 40Bs. One's already built, another one's on the way. Now you have this MBTA zoning. So, I mean, I don't think anything went wrong. I would look at it as the person that owns the land. It's what they decide and how they're going to plan forward what they're doing, which I'm sure they are. You think it's wrong, but I think the owner of the land is just planning the future. My opponent was mentioned of the widening 139. The widening 139 brought on by former Representative Jim Cantwell is the reason why we're here in regards to all this development. When I was at those meetings and they were talking about it, I was opposed to the widening 139. I said, two lanes, one in, one out. But we need a turn lane in the middle, and that's where we should have been stayed at. And this is what you get for what Representative Cantwell did: massive development now on 139, which is going to impact the town negatively down the road.
Okay. Any follow-up question with that? All right. Let me just switch topics here real quickly. What is? We also got a question that was sent in from one of our listeners with the police in town. Do you support a school? Do you support, in your opinion, on having police officers as school resource officers in our schools? Do you support that, Eric?
Yes.
Okay. And follow up. What are the most important functions that this person would perform as a school resource officer?
Well, obviously overseeing the security of the school. I mean, making sure the doors are functioning, locking, I would imagine. The one thing the schools, they take pictures and send it out between the website and to the parents and all that. And there was one time where there was an officer standing at one of the schools and he had his sunglasses on, and I contacted the chief about it. And I was like, Chief, you know, I think it's a great thing with the officer out there introducing himself to the kids, high five and all that. But eye contact is very important. And the officer had sunglasses on. So I think what I see now when I go is that they don't wear the sunglasses. Now they do make the eye contact. So that's one good aspect of it in regards to their roles is making eye contact, having a good relationship with the students. And so, like I said, the security of the school overall in making sure the students feel safe in the environment that they're learning.
Okay. Same question, Jim. Do you support the school police as school resource officers?
Well, public safety has been an important component of my whole platform since I've been here. And the school resource officer is one of that, as well as senior citizens or our vulnerable citizens at Tea Rock Garden. I absolutely support the program. That's why after the grant that ran out at the high school for $250,000, we inserted that back in the budget so we'd have a resource officer at the high school. I believe we have one at the high school, we have one at the middle school, and then we have one that alternates between the other five elementaries. I feel so passionate about children's safety that when the county retirement fund comes up, I would support having a resource officer in every school. They're not disciplinarians. They do high five Mondays. They play sports. They're in plays, and they do drug lectures. And this is what's really important. So the children will have a positive light about our safety police officers for the rest of their career. Their life.
Okay, Jonathan, question.
Sure. So this is a little outside the box here. So get ready. So the state auditor wants to audit the state legislature. If something similar was proposed at town meeting for town government, would you support it?
Let's start with you, Jim.
Sure. Could I just ask for a qualifying question? What is an audit? Because I don't know if the citizens know, but currently right now, the books of Marshfield are independently audited by an accounting firm every single year. On top of that, free cash is sent to the Commonwealth, and the Commonwealth certifies free cash each year. If you're talking about a forensic audit, is a kind of a technical term, and it's very, very expensive, probably costs millions, and it is involved typically and only used when there has been proven fraud, and then you use the audit to try to prove the fraud occurred. But to do a forensic audit on the town that is audited every year by an independent contractor and CPA firm and the Commonwealth with free cash, what are you looking for?
Same question, Eric. Do you want to repeat the question?
Sure. So the state auditor wants to audit the state legislature. If something similar was proposed at town meeting for town government, would you support it?
Someone asked this question to me, and I said it has to be justified.
Okay.
All right, so if you have something, then absolutely, I would support it. If someone's bringing forth things that are going on in regards to finances, whatever else like that, there's no doubt that I would support a forensic audit. I guess it would come down to, all right, where's the issue? Because then maybe we can tailor it down to, is it a certain department? And have it looked at right there. You know, when my opponent says that they have a prior firm that comes and audits the book, it's like a soft audit. They just make sure that the numbers look good and everything appears to be correct in regards to where the funding is going. But a forensic audit is more detailed, and they could really get into the nooks and crannies of really what's going on in town. But like I said, I would be supportive of it if someone brought forward wrongdoing, and it could be proven to allow a forensic audit. Yes.
Okay. I'll ask you a two-part question. What needs to change in town government, and what should stay the same? Let's start with you, Eric.
I think what needs to change is the consistent taxing of the homeowners in regards to their property taxes. I think right now, especially in our economic times, we need relief. The town has a $110 million budget. Some of the things I've seen on the town meeting articles, I think could be tailored. I mean, I think the DPW received $650,000 in capital funding, and they said either they already done the projects or they're not planned for a further date. So there's $650,000 right there. And then you got $500,000 going for a review of the town's finances by somebody. I think that's excessive. I mean, I believe that if I was elected as a select board member, there would really have to be questions being asked and start returning the money to people and give them a break, especially in these economic times.
Okay, 30 seconds. What should stay the same?
What should stay the same?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, there are some good things in town, but I really couldn't pinpoint it right now in regards to what stays the same. I think there does need to be change at certain levels of town government, you know, so.
Okay. Jim, what needs to change in town government, and what should stay the same?
Well, I'd start off right off by saying I think we have a wonderful town. I think I live in a wonderful town. I'm proud of the citizens of this town, and I'm very proud to represent the citizens of this town. I think one area that we could work on is at town meeting. People don't come to town meeting because it just gets so bogged down. When something's going to pass 256 to 3, we spend a half hour on it, and then it ends up being 256 to 3. So I am supportive of the new consent agenda. Like items that aren't controversial, any controversial items always have to be pulled out and handled separately. And I think that we need to really step back and say that we have a great town, and there are a lot of good things about this town. And I don't think there needs to be significant change.
Okay. Any follow-up question to that? If not, we're going to go to the lightning round now. And, of course, this is the part of the forum where we ask the candidates questions that the answers are either yes or no or one or two sentences tops. And we will tell the candidates what kind of answers we would like. Now, traditionally, those of you that are regular listeners know that I ask my question that I ask every time, every level of government, Plymouth County government, stay or go, one or two sentences. Jim.
Stay. They okay. helped us tremendously. You have no idea how much money was directed from the federal government through our county government for the OPR, American Rescue Plan.
Okay, that's two sentences. Eric Kelly, Plymouth County government, stay or go?
I'd say go, even though what Mr. Kilcoyne has pointed out, I think you could have done that funding in another way.
Okay.
Name two current or past select board members that would join you to create the ultimate Marshfield Select Board dream team.
Oh, well, that's a good one. Let's start with you, Eric.
What was that again?
Name two current or past select board members that would join you to create the ultimate Marshfield Select Board dream team.
I couldn't speak to any of the previous ones. I think it's been musical chairs with everybody that is, as you can say, is established. So
lightning, quick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you're flying solo.
Yeah, okay. At the moment, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Same question, Jim. Your dream team here.
It would be difficult. There's a lot of them. How about Gagnon and Fitzgerald?
Okay. Tom, did you have a lightning round question for candidates? Okay, hold on one second. Let me ask. I just have to cough.
So what's your favorite place or thing in Marshfield?
Eric.
These guys going to me an awful lot in the first question here. favorite place or thing?
Yeah.
I would look at the Marsh as a restaurant. Great pizza there. Right. And I love pizza, so we'll tie that all into one.
Ready?
Yes.
Easy. People, the diversity of the town, and how we all come together when there's major issues.
Okay, one more quick one. Would you support a nip ban in the town of Marshfield? Yes or no, Jim?
No.
Eric,
no.
Yes or no?
No.
Any other questions?
Number of select board members, 3, 5, 7, or other.
Okay.
Unless there is a change in town government structure, the current is good.
I'm good with 3.
Okay, good. Had some good answers here tonight, gentlemen. Some good questions, too. Let's go to your closing statements now. We reverse the order. Excuse me. A lot of dust in the building here tonight. So we opened with Jim, then went to Eric. We're going to close with Eric. It's 1 minute, and then Jim, 1 minute. So let's say good evening again to Eric Kelly.
Once again, I want to thank WATD for this opportunity. I want to thank my family and everyone out there who is supporting me and running for the select board position because I believe the town is heading in the wrong direction. I want to let everyone know that if elected, I will put my best efforts into changing the course we are on. I have heard from many of you and what your concerns are. MBTA zoning, 40B, what happened to Fire Chief Jeff Simpson, protecting the character and resources of our town, town budget, welcoming public comment at select board meetings, seeking financial relief at the local level, as well as going after available federal and state money that is not being pursued by our current town officials. I am hoping that if elected, the select board can address these issues as well as any other issues that may come before us. With your vote, I will do my best to be an open listener and strong advocate for the people of Marshfield. Don't forget town meeting on April 22nd and the town election April 27th. I greatly appreciate your support and vote. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. That was the closing statement for Eric Kelly. And let's go to your closing statement for Jim Kilcoyne.
Well, first of all, it has been a privilege to be able to serve these last 3 years. I believe this evening you've seen there are major differences between myself and my opponent. And you must ask yourself, which is the person with the experience to make the difficult decisions that are in Marshfield's best interest without a personal agenda? I bring 30 years of transferable business skill sets in leadership and finance. I always try to see the positive in people and focus on what is best long-term solution for all 11 villages of Marshfield. I want your help. I want to continue working and prioritizing public safety, schools, repairing infrastructure, and supporting our most vulnerable and the needs of our senior citizens while staying within a balanced budget. I need your help. The town needs your help by getting out and voting, whether early or in person. The decision is yours. Who has the proven skill sets, temperament, and decades of decision-making and leadership experience and will make the difficult decisions, popular or not. I'm Jim Kilcoyne and asking for your vote on the 27th.
Thank you very much. That was a closing statement with Jim Kilcoyne. You've been listening to a WATD political forum here. The race is for Marshfield Select Board. The election is on April 27th. You've heard both candidates here tonight, Jim Kilcoyne, Eric Kelly. You've heard questions also from Jonathan Grabowski, the executive director of Marshfield Community Media. This will be up online. And remember, you can get complete results on WATD. Stay tuned on election night. Get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James. Thank you for listening. 95.9 WATD.